Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Over the past two seasons of fantasy football, Andrew Brayshaw has been a constant in the top tier of premium midfielders. He hasn't missed a game, while in AFL fantasy, he's joint leading ton converter to games. Supercoach, maybe not as high, but I can see this translating to crescendoing towards a 120 season in Supercoach and another 110 plus year in AFL fantasy. But will it be again business as usual for Andy Brayshaw in 2024? Has he got a little bit of a bump with a change in that midfield? Or will regression finally come his way? We're talking about Andrew Brayshaw on today's episode of The 50 Most Relevant. He's sitting at number 5, which for some in the community see that as, MJ, that's a big, bold call to say he's one of the 5 most relevant players this year. Yeah. Happy to get behind it. At the end of the day, it's a subjective list for who I think is relevant. You're absolutely very much entitled to disagree. But joining me on this episode, as he has right throughout this preseason and over the past couple of years, is a regular part of the Coaches Panel. He also sits alongside and works with the guys at Pod. Louis, nice to see you. Andy Brayshaw, he's such a good guy to talk about as we get towards the end of this year's 50 Most Relevant.
Yeah, firstly, thanks for having me, MJ. And keen to talk about Andrew Brayshaw. He's a young player who really sort of broke onto the scene from a fantasy perspective and an AFL perspective about 3 or 4 years ago. And no surprise he sits here at number 5 today. He has been an absolute stalwart of a scorer, but also in terms of his availability across the format. So I'm very keen to unpack this guy and why he may or may not be a good pick this season.
If we take a quick look at the overarching perspective of what he did for us in 2023, he's coming in off a seasonal average of a 108.9 in Supercoach. 16 tons, a top score of 149, means he is priced at over $600,000 for us in that format. The top score of 149, it's like nothing compared to a career high, 190. So, yeah, you don't think Andy Brayshaw's got some ceiling? You need to go back over the past 3 years to see that this Fremantle midfielder can absolutely go in Supercoach. While over in AFL Fantasy and Dream Team, he's just a touch over $1 million in Dream Team and literally $4,000 shy of it in AFL Fantasy. It's off the back of going at 110.3 last year. 18 tons in what many would say was a down season. I'll take a down year of a 110 average and that many tons and games played. Like, my goodness me, I will take that every day of the week. 157, top score of the year. A 181 was a career high. And Louis, all you need to do is go back and just watch a couple of games of Fremantle last year and sort of the back half of the year and pretty much anything in 2022 and 2021. And there is one key component that unlocks Andrew Brayshaw's scoring, and that is work rate. He wills himself to wherever the ball is. He'll push himself into the contest when needed and win that contested footy. And if he's not going to win the footy, he's first to wrap those tackles up. He's quick to get into space. He's not an explosive speed, but he's quick to read the play, get himself to be that first receive player by mark or by handball, and then set up this Fremantle assault of pushing the ball forward. Smart footballer, smart at how he uses his work rate. And one of the things I love about the way he builds his score, Louis, is he just can go from being at 10, 15 points at quarter time. But because he scores in all the columns of contested, uncontested, marks, tackles, even gets involved in score involvements and impact scoreboards, in a 5-minute period, he can stock up 30 points without even breaking a sweat.
Yeah, you're exactly right, MJ. And work rate is just pretty much the perfect way to put it. He's one of the fittest guys in the AFL. And look, you'd certainly hope so with those hundreds that he does every single Christmas day with his brothers and It comes to fruition, mate, doesn't it? When you see Fremantle play, he is constantly that player who's not only around the football to begin with, he's also the one that's pushing over to the next contest, out for that outlet kick, and it translates to fantasy scoring. And it really is an understated point how fitness can really help you build and tick over a score continually throughout a game. Other players, they start to tire, perhaps the game gets a little bit open or tight, and he's one that can just keep on ticking along and getting it done. And I feel like every time I come on this podcast, MJ, we talk about these players that can fill stat lines, but why wouldn't you? Like, he is almost the perfect fantasy player. He spreads for those marks, but he's inside tackling as well, providing that extra grunt in the midfield. He's got a nice kick to handball ratio because he's great by foot as well. And being a young leader of that side, only 24 years old, I'm really predicting that this is going to be something that we see for years to come. And to this point in his career, it's been something that we've seen over a large period of time already, despite his young age. So, you know, you mention all that and you look at some of his previous averages, he's gone at 104, 112, and then 110 in the last three seasons. So not sure there's many players out there that can average that 109 across three seasons. And it's just a lot of boxes to tick here, MJ.
He's gone four consecutive seasons in Supercoach. You're talking about those AFL fantasy stat lines. Four consecutive years of 100-plus in Supercoach, and has already given us a 111 prior to what he did last year, which, as I mentioned, was deemed a down year in the community. There was one core reason for it, and that is he entered into and struggled through the preseason with a little bit of a knee concern. He actually had a quad muscle issue over his kneecap. I don't even know how that happens, but I'm told it can happen, and that was causing him some great discomfort. And it was really only round eight onwards that he stated publicly, it's probably round seven personally when he felt it, but round eight publicly in May, that he said, I finally feel like I've got strength and confidence and pain eliminated from my body. And that's important for a guy that work rate is the key that unlocks his scoring chain. It's not just a contested ball winner. He's not just an uncontested style player. He's a both and. And so when you're feeling that pain point through your legs and through your joints and through your knees that creates that ability to get from stoppage to work rate moment to stoppage into uncontested spaces, of course that's going to have an impact. And we saw that in his scoring. Even though he averaged last year for us a 110 in AFL fantasy, six scores over 120 and 18 tons, it was way below what he'd done over previous seasons. Just in that first seven games in AFL fantasy, he goes at an average of 102.5 with four scores under 100. Yeah, even under significant physical duress, he's still averaging triple figures in AFL fantasy, while in Supercoach, a bit more of a toll. 91 average in those first seven games and just two scores over 100. However, from that point that he says publicly, I am pain-free. This is what he does in the final 16 games. A 113 average in AFL fantasy. So a 3 to 4 points per game bump, which you go, that's not much. That's up at the upper echelon already at 110. So he's got that next gear. So if you're looking for a little bit of upside on price point, there's where you're looking for it. While he goes at an even better 116.7 in Supercoach, nothing under 90 from round six in AFL fantasy. So you're looking at upside, and you mentioned that historical scoring that's gone for us is before we even turn to 2024, there's some dynamics we've got to unpack. If you're talking about a player that you go, have they got captaincy and ceiling potential? Yes, across the formats. Have they got multiple seasons where they've shown they've got 100 plus? The answer is yes. But have they reached their scoring pinnacle? I don't think anyone with any confidence is going, this is as good as we're going to get of Andrew Brayshaw. I think everybody knows that work rate, when it's fully unlocked, he's got the capacity to be the top scoring player across all the formats as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, big time, mate. And captain option is exactly what you're picking him for at 110. And I know we do like to focus on the ceiling of players. And of course we do. If you can pop a 140 and have it doubled, then, you know, it's happy days and you're on your way. But I also like to look at the floor too, and because it's not easy to always pick a captain, and sometimes you do miss. But you know, that 72 in 2023 was his lowest score, and that came in the first five rounds when we knew he was dealing with some injuries. And then 90 was his next worst in that 6 week period as well. So, and just on that too, 72 was actually his lowest since 2021 when he first broke out. So to have that reliability in a guy at 110 to constantly tick over and not only be able to give you that average score, but to be a captain option as well, is so valuable. And we touched on it big time at the start of the show. He just does it all. I'm looking at his transition and stoppage points here, and that's courtesy of Jaden Popowski on Twitter. Does some absolutely fantastic things, and definitely the rising star of the preseason. Just does it all. But I look at his transition points here. It's 55.9, seriously impressive. And then the stoppage points at 58.2. So it doesn't matter where he is on the ground. It's probably a little bit like how we spoke about Rosie a couple of days ago, that he's able to find ways to score regardless of where he is on the ground. And being such a stalwart of that Fremantle side and such a reliable player, this is why he gets it done constantly, because the coaches are happy to rely on him. And I'm not sure if I mentioned at the top of the show too, his durability, 104 out of a possible 106 games, even despite that injury affected start, just goes to show that he's someone that we can really consider in our starting squads to not only score strongly, but to be there for a whole season, which is what you want at the price point.
So I want to take the conversation specifically to AFL fantasy for a moment. That's certainly the preference of choice of format for you in terms of play. But I also think from a super coach perspective, given the volume of trades we now have right up to 40, where about a decade ago, that's now double to what we had to navigate. The game and the way we play it is now evolving, where the risk profile of being able to increase our team value by not having to pay for as many at the top end and is kind of a little bit more accessible to it. It's always been a trading game. The formats have always been won based on the moves you make, but there is the mindset now, and I don't disagree that it's a wrong mindset, is that you don't have to access these guys at the upper echelons of price because you're looking to increase your total team value in as many spots as you can. And so we do see in AFL fantasy guys that are up and near that $1 million price tag, even sometimes just over $900,000. People are really averse to starting if they don't feel like there's an upside. So talk to me about that ideology, because I think it's right. I also think there's some assumptions that might not always hold true to that don't get discussed enough, which we'll get to, but talk to me about that. Like, you see a guy that's nearly $1 million in AFL fantasy. Again, there's parallels for Supercoach here. What is it you need to be able to justify to select Andrew Brayshaw or a player like him, given he might not present much value based on his price point to the scoring trend he's done previously and the scoring projection of what he's going to do moving forward?
Yeah, there's definitely a strong mindset across the community, and I tend to agree with it as well, that, you know, 20, 25, 30 points upside is where you want to be, because in that case, you are getting the scoring and you're also getting that cash ticking over. But someone like an Andrew Brayshaw, who you're picking at 110, you're sort of already banking on that keeper straight away. Whereas some of these other guys, it's more you're just looking at that upside and to jump off, because if you're starting a player, then it doesn't necessarily matter what their upside is if you're planning on keeping them. Of course, you know, you're going to add your team value, and you know, you're going to be able to pick somebody else in your team instead, which, you know, can generate more points. But I think we do sort of overlook where the upside can come from some of these 110 guys. So if you can find someone who's got, you know, 3, 4, 5 points upside in this bracket, constantly putting a captain option his way as well, then I think that goes a long way to sort of having, like I mentioned with Andrew Brayshaw, this reliability in your squad, this sort of pillar of strength where you can constantly sort of go back to that. So Andrew Brayshaw is one that is really sort of taking advantage of the current game style at Fremantle. They're They're a team that are probably a little bit old school in terms of just a couple of years ago when we were seeing more possession, more disposal, and the ledger seems to have swung where, you know, teams are playing fast, gun, you know, go, go, go. But you look at Fremantle, the Justin Longmuir came from Collingwood, which was notoriously one of those sides that was sharing the ball around. He's sort of instigated that at Fremantle as well. And you look at some of the team stats, it's actually no surprise where Andrew Brayshaw is finding this ceiling and this high floor. So, you know, uncontested play, ranking top five, top four for meters gained per disposal. So, they're clearly chipping it around a lot more. Bottom three for meters gained. So they're clearly playing a game where they want to share the ball around. They want to cut through opposition defenses. And as fantasy coaches, we love that because that translates to a kick mark game where you can constantly see these scores ticking over. So that's where we might be able to see a little bit of upside in a guy like this. And a lot of the other 110 guys too, like if you can identify team changes first, that's often where it comes from. It's not just, you know, a player getting better again, because, you know, we've seen before that a player can have a better season from an AFL perspective, but average less in a fantasy perspective. There's a lot of examples of that. So that's sort of where I like to look for my upside in these guys priced at 110. And that sort of 3 to 5 points upside, even though it seems minuscule, is there's a lot that goes into that. So identifying it is crucial.
And it does mean if he does hold that in AFL fantasy, again, I think in Supercoach, there's a greater pathway where that 116 he did over the final 16 games of last year, in contrast to that 108, 109 he's priced at. Well, now that takes him from ranked 15th mid overall, which he was last year by average. All of a sudden, that ascends him to the top 10. And to me, that's enough, let alone we'll talk buys and structures in a moment. But to me, in Supercoach, like that's enough. If you can get up to 115, you're home. And in Dream Team and Fantasy, one of the interesting things I really would love to let you, because I haven't heard this conversation yet. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe because I'm not listening to enough different content that's out there. The beautiful thing is there's so much great content out at the moment. It is hard to consume at all. But 12 months ago, we were gifted some of the best breakout options or positional options that meant we could pay up. And we were getting almost every week, 7 or 8 guys we could throw the captaincy or vice captaincy on. And they all came in with value. I know it's perspective, but Taranto, we knew was going to push that 105, 110 marker. If he was a pure mid, he got that and was really one of the safest vice captaincy options early. We had a little bit of baked in value with a Connor Rosie because we saw for half of 2022 what he'd score in that midfield role. So we knew we'd get that. Canelio was another. We knew that he'd had a year where he really had some role diversity. So we knew we were getting ourselves a little bit of value. Then you had through the midfield, Caleb Sarong and Tom Green, who were bursting down the door, and it just was a matter of time that were captaincy option guys for us. And then Nick Dacos, I think he surprised us all that he ascended to the moon as quickly. We knew he'd one day become one of the top fantasy performers across the formats, but he got so big for us. Did we just get lucky? Maybe that's the way to ask it, that these value guys that were all 90-ish sort of price points, that we got luxury year where we had 7 or 8 that we could put the VC on, but we actually might not see that this year. Because I don't see that same volume of luxury of all these 90 guys that'll go 105. Do we need the Brayshaw types to be able to help us with our value? Is that just a wrong lens of looking at 2023, or is that potentially something there?
Well, you're spot on about 2023. We were certainly gifted a lot of players that were pretty bankable from not only just selecting in your side, but from a VC captain sense. Probably translates a little bit to the rookies as well, where this last couple of years, these kids, they come in and they're just already ready. And we saw last year probably the number one guy in Harry Sheezel was just an absolute gun every single year. I think you can look at it both ways, MJ. Like this season especially is going to be quite different to how we've played it in previous years. So I think we've touched on enough that this guy is pretty reliable scorer, right? But And we all love having a 110 guy that we can sort of pin our hat on. But I think from a captain perspective, it may be a little bit different this season in that we do have four buys across those first six rounds. So we have this ability where we can have two bites at the cherry nearly every single week. And it's probably something we haven't had in the last couple of years, unless you're purposely running a red dot. And the rookie R4 that just wouldn't get on the park was, quite often that guy. But in a season where there's all this opportunity to find top scorers, but not only that, also get these rookies onto your field that can pop one, certainly through these bye rounds, I'm not sure it carries as much of a weight this season, but it's one of those things, mate. There's a million ways to skin a cat, and I don't think there's any way I'd convince anybody out of Andrew Brayshaw. But at the same time, if that was more your thinking, that I want to take a punt on a Jack Steele who plays quite a few early games early and has that ceiling that I've seen. Brody Grundy, I'm backing him to go back to his 105 ways. Max Gawn is another one that's been floated around quite a lot, and we know what he's capable of when he's the sole ruck. So yeah, that's probably where I sit on that one, mate.
Yeah, it makes sense. That Fremantle side undertook a big dynamic change towards the end of last year. Hayden Young comes into the midfield for the final five games, and Nat Fyfe will roll into this midfield. He's not breaking the top three. I'm really bullish. I know Mini Monk is, big on the jungle drums, not just as our Fremantle representative on the coaches panel, but big time watching going Young, Brayshaw, Sarong. That is their centerpiece three of this inside midfield. And Fyfe will play fourth fiddle at best and probably sit somewhere around that 50-50 split. So how did Andy Brayshaw score in those five games where Young, Sarong and Brayshaw were the centerpiece three? Great question. He goes at 116 in AFL fantasy and 122 in Supercoach and nothing under 100. Why? There's a couple of reasons why, but one, Sarong is now the number one guy in that midfield. If there's a tag coming to anyone, it's coming to Caleb Sarong, not to Andrew Brayshaw, which we did see in 2021 and 2022, which did limit his ceiling. It means Hayden Young, he's coming in there. I got a great contrast from Pig Mentality. We did the episode on Hayden just the other day where I said he could be like Jordan Dawson. Pig Mentality was even better. He's like, he's not just a Jordan Dawson. It's a Callum Mills when he moved into the midfield. It's the defensive-minded ability when needed and can be offensively attacking, do the both. And he's going to be in there to do the shutdown roles and add some presence, some skill, and some physicality. So what's Andrew Brayshaw? He's the best of both worlds. He can win it on the inside and he gets involved on the outside. So we could see some more moments, Louis, where he might have previously had to be that first touch clearance winner. He might now be able to be the first receive option, which is really important for a couple of key components, whether that be marks, score involvements, and a bunch of different score chain elements. So to me, I think that's only a positive thing. Do you think Young and or Fyfe coming in is a negative thing for Andrew Brayshaw?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, MJ, and it's going to be something that over the first couple of rounds, we're definitely going to learn pretty quickly how that affects him. I do sort of subscribe to that fact that, yes, yeah, Sarong's your first touch clearance guy that gets the ball. If Hayden Young is regularly tagging, then that's just another head down on the opposition team that isn't impacting the contest perhaps as much, which can let Brayshaw sort of apply his trade and do all the things that we love. On the contrary, could we see some tackles perhaps, falling the other way? So maybe he doesn't need to be that pressure player. You can look at it both ways. That means more marks potentially, but I sort of tend to think that tackle number's going to go down a little bit because he doesn't need to be that player. Nat Fyfe is probably the other one that does concern me a little bit there. Going back to our stoppage points, which we mentioned earlier, Nat Fyfe was only 18.2. And look, that's reflective of how much footy he played and the role that he played. But from everything we're hearing this preseason, Nat Fyfe will be in that midfield. And he's a little bit of a bull out the gates too. And we mentioned teams wanting to get a little bit quicker. It's certainly the trend. Do we start to see a bit more of a Nat Fyfe, Sarong, and Hayden Young type midfield. I'm not saying Brayshaw is going to be ousted, although I think out of that lot, he probably is the better outside player on like a wing half, high half forward type role. But I do have a few little concerns that, okay, maybe Nat Fyfe, Sarong are your first touch players that are going to be, you know, bursting out of stoppage and maybe just skipping that extra kick and not going as sort of lateral and a little bit more linear down the ground.
One of the big attractions to Andrew Brayshaw is back-to-back seasons of 110 in AFL fantasy. And politely, you take that injury-impacted stretch of seven games where he's managed. And even then, you roll that up. He's basically a 110 guy for the past 2 years in Supercoach as well. So let's call him what he is, a 110 guy that you're basically paying for a 110. But where's the upside outside of him increasing his scoring avenue, which, as you mentioned, there's a pathway where it can happen. There is also a pathway where regression of a handful of points can come. I think what's tipping people over towards him is he, alongside the rest of his Fremantle teammates and Port Adelaide, have that round 13 bye, which is so critical for us. It's the easiest bye for us to navigate of both bye blocks that we've got, meaning in that middle block of the year where teams have up to six teams off, he's going to be able to help you through and is a vice-captaincy captain option every single week, let alone those first four blocks of buys we have inside the opening six rounds. So that kind of levels it out for some people where they go, yeah, he might not improve his scoring. He might be about 30,000, 40,000 cheaper in Supercoach. He might be 70,000 or 80,000 cheaper in AFL fantasy, but I've got a guy who on any week can pop a 150 on all those important bye weeks where it's best 18 and ceiling is rewarded and cows are falling off my score. I've got a premium that's always available for me that I don't have to look at the fixtures. I know most weeks he won't get tagged. In fact, he's not getting tagged. He's got the good role. He's got a good mix. And I just feel I put all those elements together and I just go, you know what? I can take a loss of 30K. I can take a loss of 40K knowing I'm walking into the season with a 110 guy that could be a captain and he's going to get me through those challenging bye weeks.
Yeah, it goes back to that sort of pillar that we mentioned before, doesn't it? This guy that we can rely on every single week. And we do like to focus on the upside, certainly as fantasy coaches in terms of scoring and cash generation. But sometimes with these guys priced at 110, it's about the one with the least downside. So who's the one that you can convince yourself that, okay, if I'm going to pay this price tag, like I might lose some value on my team. I might lose a handful of points, you know, as we said before, 3 to 5 points potentially. But Brayshaw really feels like one of those guys where you can sort of build that case around, okay, well, he's young. He's done it for a long time. He's gone 109 across 3 years, he's now no longer the tag target. So there's some potential upside there as well. And yeah, he's just a fantastic player, mate. And he's going to be one that's probably going to rank high in this 50 most relevant every single season for that reason.
So what's your guiding driver? That probably becomes the first pathway into deciding whether Brayshaw is a starting squad option for you or is it not. Do you believe you need to hold value on every single selection you have in your 30 players? Is that your overarching guiding principle? If it is, there is a pathway where you look at Brayshaw, but just looking at his price point versus the previous two seasons, it probably means you're not looking at him as the financial asset alone. But if it's now the buys and how you navigate through these and looking for ceiling players that are available in every single one of them and maximizing scoring and not losing significant or much price point, if these become a guiding light and principle for you, well, now Brayshaw becomes a more important option for you. We all have different things that move and motivate us equally. We both have and all have different risk appetites. Some, we need to trade aggressive to win. just guaranteeing that out there for you. If you want to win your format, you've got to be aggressive with your trading. But for some, that aggressiveness means they have a couple of anchors like a Brayshaw. People picked Doherty last year because they wanted an anchor in that back line. Can you use that same mindset and ideology with a Brayshaw? Now, there's some flaw in it because you were hoping Doherty to be clear and supreme and he wasn't. And if Brayshaw's not clear and supreme as the number one, it might not work for you. But again, does the buys move you? Is it the price point that moves you? Do you feel like you're going to approach the buys with, I'm looking for ceiling and maximization and I don't care about the count? Or are you like, no, I'm still generating value. Even if I don't score more, I'm trying to maximize value on every single player. And when I get to my upgrade cadences of round 7, 8, 9, I'm absolutely firing. To me, I don't see a world where he drops under 110 in AFL fantasy. I'm quite bullish that he can push a 115 seasonal average in Supercoach. And I think the buys might just tip people over the line, or the lack of perceived value. Those to me feel like the two tipping points, and whichever you elevate higher probably rules you in or out of starting him or considering him as an early upgrade option.
Yeah, no, all points totally correct there, MJ. It's definitely going to be up to the coach, as it always is, but it depends what you value here. I think there's merit for both scenarios, but yeah, I sort of tend to believe that he is going to be at least 110, and I think maybe not as bullish at 115, but maybe about that 112 range that we saw back in 2022. And that's just from some caginess over that midfield changing a little bit in the engine room. And look, I wouldn't be surprised if it did. Obviously, Fremantle did dip a little bit last season compared to what they did in 2022. But then, you go back to who was there. There was Mundy there. There was Brody in there. And Brayshaw was still able to go at that 112 rate. So, yeah, he's a guy that's really hard to poke holes in. I think it's... it's definitely going to be a good pick either way you go. It's just about really solidifying the reasons that you're picking him.
Yeah, it's a fair shout. Let's look at him on draft day. You mentioned that durability over the past 3 or 4 seasons, that he does not miss much games of football. That availability is incredibly helpful for us. And if you're playing through all of the bye rounds, again, this and something we spoke with Stevie Fizz when we did the episode on Sam Flanders, he talked about this strategy of, normally it might not matter, but if you are playing through both blocks of buys, if Brayshaw helps you through all, he might just move up a spot or 2 or 3 in your ranking or the way you tier out your midfielders if he's going to be there and available for you. In an AFL fantasy draft, I've got a super coach thought in a moment, but in an AFL fantasy draft, look, he's a clear M1. I don't see him dropping out of that, but is he a first round pick? That's the question I want to know.
Yeah, I think he is, MJ, just because there doesn't seem to be those upper echelon defenders that people are as confident in as well as those forwards. Like we had some, like you mentioned, Tim Taranto, Connor Rosie, some of these guys were like really quite, coaches were quite bullish on them and they weren't round one picks. But I think because we've got that lack of that this year, that 110 guy that you can get into your midfield is just going to have a little bit more of a premium this year, whereas you can take a few more risks, a few more punts, and maybe, just wait a little bit on your other positions. So for me, I really struggle to see somebody like Andrew Brayshaw sliding from the first round at all. I think he'll be one of many coaches' first picks, really.
And if he does, it'll be very, very early in the second, and it'll be because people are gobbling up all those early premium rucks and probably 1 or 2 of those defenders, and that might slide him out very, very early. But, yeah, if you're thinking he might slide to you late in the second round, I would love to be in that draft league. That's all I'll say in AFL fantasy. While in Supercoach, positionally, he's going to sit as an M2 based off seasonal average. And I think that's probably his ADP spot. I think he'll probably go late second round, early third. But I wouldn't be opposed to him being my M1 in a Supercoach league, especially if it meant I was locking away an English or a Gorn or a Dacos type and was able to get him on the turn in the second round. And he's the best available mid. yeah, I'd be really, really happy with that. But I do think an M2 spot is most likely to be the spot we see him sitting in there. Hey, Louis, it's been a pleasure yet again, not just on this episode, but right throughout the preseason, having you on the coaches panel and talking about these players in the 50 most relevant.
Thanks, mate. And this will probably be my last appearance on it for this year. So I'll just say, mate, fantastic job. Yeah. Absolutely one of the best fantasy producers in general, but certainly for all those coaches that are just frothing at the mouth for a bit of early preseason content. And the mountain of work that you do just around the clock is unbelievable. So thanks for having me on, but also thanks for this wonderful series that you do every single year, mate. It's not going unappreciated, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for that. If you are enjoying this series, one, thank you. We do the 50 most relevant. It's not just me here at the coaches panel that does it. It's every single person that it's part of the panel gets involved, not just on these podcasts, but helping with the research, with road testing the orders and challenging and poking and prodding. So it's certainly far from a one-man band. But if you have been enjoying this series so far, make sure if you haven't already, jump over to wherever you listen to this podcast or any other podcast. We are there. Just simply go and search for us. Subscribe and give a 5-star rating. If you've enjoyed any of these episodes, we greatly appreciate it. If you're on Apple Podcasts, it also gives you the opportunity to give a review in there. We'd love to hear what you've been thinking about the 50 most relevant in 2024. While we're also been putting these episodes up on YouTube, where you can watch them at your leisure. We have done the most amount of video content in the preseason that you can get across the community. So jump on in over there, subscribe and turn those notifications on. Help us get to our first step goal of 1,000 subscribers by the end of the 50 most relevant. We might just fall a little bit shy of that, but you know what? Given we didn't even have a YouTube channel really at the start of the preseason, we'll take it. So thank you if you've subscribed. And if you haven't, we'd still love you to do that. All the ways you can get in touch with the coaches panel on social media, as well as become part of our Patreon supporter group, where you can get additional bonus content. You can find that in the description of this episode. So just 4 players left to go in the 50 most relevant. There's one player left that is what many think is going to be the number one defender. There's someone that I think many think is an undeniable ruck value. There's another that is a out and out fantasy football jet and has nearly been that for the better part of a decade across multiple positions. And there's another who's a young gun who had his wings clipped a bit last year, but we saw enough towards the back of the season to suggest that maybe that he's about to skyrocket to the moon. So which of those 4 do you think I find the least relevant? They're all pretty damn relevant. They're in the top 5, for goodness sake. But who do I say might not be as relevant as the other? This isn't a random assortment of names put together. These are ranked in an order. So who do I think is sitting at number 4 most relevant? You'll find out tomorrow.